Welcome to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast, your home for insights and insider knowledge about hypnotic change work. With your hosts, control practitioners and hypnotists, Nicole Mazzucato and Anthony Gitch.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Hypnotic Healers. My name is Nicole Mazzucato, and as always, I am here with my co-host, Anthony Gitch, who's currently dancing around the screen in front of me. We'd like to welcome you back to another episode. As always, our usual disclaimer, Anthony nor I are licensed medical professionals, doctors, psychologists or psychiatrists, so please do not make any changes to any medications or treatments that you are on at the moment based on the conversation you hear here today. Take what you like and leave the rest. And while you're leaving stuff, you might as well leave us a really nice review, a love, a like, a thumbs up, share us around, show us to your friends, and get in touch and let us know how fabulous we are. Because it's always nice for someone else to tell you, right?
You know, it is nice to hear when people are listening to the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy that. I enjoy that a lot. And I know a lot of my clients listen to it because, you know, they all know that I do it. And a lot of my clients listen. And I like that because I appreciate them.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's nice to get feedback from people and know that they're out there.
Yeah, know that there's some benefit that's coming, right?
Considering our listenership is 100% earth-based.
Right. That hasn't changed yet, I know.
No. Spotify's strange stats go all the way back to which planet our listeners are on.
Like we said before, we're waiting for another listener on another planet.
Yeah, we're waiting for the day where the percentage starts changing.
Yeah, Mars.
Yeah.
Anyway, today we are talking about something interesting, a passion of Nicole's, and certainly something that I don't practice, and I don't turn it away, but it's not something I seek out like she does. But we're going to talk about working with teenagers and that sort of thing. And yeah, I'm going to let Nicole start on that one.
So, I mean, I don't take any clients under the age of 13. So literally from the teens upwards, right? I'm not working with kids. I'm not working with 11 and 12 year olds, literally teenagers. And if they are 13, they need to be quite mature. They need to have, you know, an understanding and engagement and an ability to engage in the work that we're doing, right? From my perspective, I know there are plenty of other people that will work with younger kids, and hypnosis is really effective with young kids because of their wonderful imagination and how easily receptive, you know, how receptive they are to suggestion. But that's not what I do. I've always loved being around teenagers and working with teenagers. And I used to run summer schools for teens from about 14 years upwards. I've currently been working at a boarding school with teenagers from 15 upwards. And I love being around them. I love being in that environment. There are moments where you want to throttle them, right?
Thing though is you're working from kids, a huge multicultural.
Oh yeah.
I mean, because you're working with kids from all over the world.
Yeah. And I always have.
Generally of high stature.
Not necessarily. I've worked with kids from all sorts of, you know, all sorts of backgrounds and from all over the world. I say kids, I mean teens.
Right.
Young people. Let's use that. Young people.
Yep.
And I do. There's a complexity to them that I find fascinating, and I really appreciate about them.
Well, you know, I think that complexity comes from the fact that their mind is starting to become a lot more active, in the sense of how they're interacting with the world and how the world is imposing upon them certain ideas and that sort of thing. And so, you know, they don't know what to do with all of the energy that's being created or where it needs to be directed to. And that's why it needs to be, you know, earlier when you and I were first talking about the idea of even talking about teenagers, you know, this is where I got a little bit riled up, not riled up, but I get passionate about the fact that I think that so many of the challenges that kids have these days are due to a lack of parenting and a non-involvement at a meaningful level, not I'm going to take my kid to the soccer practice game and sit in the car and look at Facebook and Instagram while they're in practice. And, oh, I'm a great mom because I cut up the oranges this week. No, it's sitting out on the sidelines with them. It's talking with them after the practice about what happened in it or at the games or even at school that day and how they're interacting with their friends. And, you know, it's just, for me, it gets frustrating because I think so many of the challenges that kids are seeing these days is due to messed up parents, particularly when it comes to sexual orientation.
Right, right. There's so much in what you just said that I really want to unpack. And I really don't know that I'm going to remember it all, but yes. So I have a saying, and I've said this for quite a while now, and I know some parents that have really taken this on and been like, that's so helpful. And it's, you know, as a parent, it's part of your job to fuck your kids up. And as somebody's kid, it's our job to unfuck ourselves. Mm-hmm. Meaning that no matter what you do as a parent, you will never get it right. You could be 100% involved and present and there for your kid. And for them, that's not the right kind of parenting.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You could be, give them the freedom that they really desire. And for them, that ends up not being the right kind of parenting because they wanted more boundaries. Do you not like, you'll never get it right.
Actually more than one. Yeah. I
mean. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So you'll never get it right. Why? Because you can never be inside your kid's head 24 hours a day.
Right.
So you can do things and try things according to your values and to your experience and think that that's what's best for your kid, but you'll never get it right. You'll always fuck something up along the way and they'll always have something to blame you for, essentially.
Well, you know, and here's the interesting thing is, you know, I've got a brother and a sister. I've got an older sister and a younger brother. So of course that makes me the you know, epitome of that middle child sort of thing. Where I think that's where I still play the bridge between things, right? Where I'm such a good mediator. But at any rate, each one of us needed something different, right? And our parents, you know, I mean, they made mistakes because each one of us are different. And what worked with my sister certainly didn't work with me.
And
that sort of thing, right? And I think that's a given.
Part of the problem here is that I think the generation gaps are getting bigger and bigger for a number of reasons. First of all, a lot of people are having children later on in life. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's the generation gap. You're now looking at two or three generations difference if you're having kids in your 40s than if you have kids in your, you know, late sort of early 20s.
My parents and your parents did.
Right. Yeah. You've now jumped an extra two generations difference from your kids. And that's very difficult to understand what your kids are now involved in and taking on and learning and understanding. I mean, this experience that I'm having at the moment at this boarding school, living with these kids and being so intensely involved in their lives, in their process, in their growth on a daily basis. I mean, they are blowing my mind. They are so switched on. They have so much information that 10 years ago or 5 years ago, even these young people didn't have that sort of information. And they're using words like narcissistic and gaslighting and things like that, like 15, 16 years old. I only understood what those concepts meant a couple of years ago.
Right.
And I'm nearly, do you know what I mean? I'm in my late 30s. But it's like,
ghosting. Someone says, oh my God, you're ghosting. I'm like,
yeah, but I mean, these are big terms. You know, these are massive terms that they're they're grasping, they're understanding what they're about, and they're really kind of using them and incorporating them, talking about them and giving examples of how that's showing up in their life. And it's, you know, the kind of intricacies of what's going on in their minds is so deep and complex. Really, like some of them, I'm just being floored by them because I'm like, wow, that's an insane amount of information to have in your brain at this stage in your life.
I remember when even with my nieces having conversations with them at times and then saying things. And I was just like, I don't remember having conversations like they were having at that age. I mean, it used to blow my mind. And I wasn't around them as much as you, but I would show up over at my brother's house and my niece would be there with a bunch of her friends. And, you know, they would all literally be, I would come in and be like, oh, hey, because when I was around my friends, whether we were studying or not, it was always, you know, more party time than study time, but we didn't really study. Went over there and I'm like, ah, being Uncle Anthony. They're all like, excuse me, we're studying. I'm like, all right, then, you know, let's all be serious. And totally different kind of concept than any of the kids that I grew up with.
Yeah. Right?
The conversations they would have, it was just like, wow, I wasn't having conversations about many politics and people's rights and this and that when I was 14 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was just concerned with who the next band was.
Right.
You know,
right.
Literally.
And I guess that also comes from exposure and direct influence, right? So at the moment, we've had quite a number of Ukrainian students, Russian students from, you know, or students from that area that are directly being impacted by the war. And they got up immediately to go to protests every day, to organize fundraisers, to, you know, invite speakers to the school to talk about the conflict and what's going on. I mean, you know, they really moved with the support of the college. They really moved and they continue to move a lot of things to support. I mean, you know, they're being directly affected by this, whether they're Russian or Ukrainian, it doesn't matter.
Right.
And being able to engage in conversation, we've been really lucky in the fact that we've had no conflict between our students. Or if there has been conflict, it hasn't been of a level that's required intervention.
Right. Disruptive.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe there's been disagreement and that's fine. But again, this environment that we're cultivating here is very much about that's okay. Yeah, disagreement is okay. What's not okay is causing harm to each other.
Well, I mean, even when it comes to, you know, one of the things that I think it's really important for us to teach that generation when we're working with teenagers, and I remind all of my parents of this and anybody who works with kids, we always, as an adult, we have the option of what we're learning, what we take in. We don't have the option. We are 100% of the time teaching. And I think that we forget that. And so when these teenagers are exposed to, like in this country, this conflict between the Senate and the Congress and Democrats and Republicans, and the fact that you've got the extremists on both sides of that who absolutely refuse to be open to conversation or dialogue, any kind of meaningful dialogue, because, and that's the kind of stuff they're seeing. And that is one of the things that I do like when I see the high schoolers coming up and protesting, you know, creating these walkouts based upon what's happening inside of their school and certain things that they feel are inappropriate that are going on, this discrimination or this whatever this bullying is, or, you know, because they are the ones right now in this country, particularly. I wouldn't want to be in high school these days. My God, all the shootings that are going on in this country, and I think back on that because we all had guns in our cars when I was in high school. And I don't think the back of almost any of the trucks didn't have a freaking shotgun in the window. I grew up in the country, for God's sakes. We grew up with guns. We grew up shooting. I have shot almost, I've shot all sorts of guns. I've shot handguns. I've shot AR-15 assault rifles. And I can assure you they're not for hunting. The teenagers these days haven't been taught communication or conflict resolution.
Well, that's an inheritance from a generation a generation before them that's bringing them up that also doesn't have those skills. You know, we pass on the skill, we cultivate what we know. Yeah. And so if parents,
this is what you mentioned, is the generational gap. I mean, you know, you've got people that are in their late 60s and 70s that are now in charge of things, and you've got all this great bunch of younger people, and there's a huge disconnect between what is going on now and what needs to be happening in the government, because it got a bunch of old turds running shit that need to back the fuck off and go and get in their little hammock and rest and let this next generation take shit over, because they're understanding what we don't understand.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. In terms of working with teenagers, then it's quite different from working with an adult, because I feel like with an adult you can really compartmentalize almost, right? You can compartmentalize the issue that you're working on and say, okay, this is the goal, this is what we're working on for the next three sessions until we get there. With a student, with a young person, while you can do that, the layers that are kind of on top of that are so many that you know there's a lot of strings that you need to pull to actually, you know, help them get to the thing that's really going on. Do you see what I mean? It's and like I say, I've been working with a lot of teenagers. The other problem here, where there are problems in the family, and 99% of the time there are problems with the family, right? And there's something going on. There's some sort of dynamic going on with the parents, or, you know, and school is definitely a factor. Teachers have unfortunately a really bad reputation because there aren't enough teachers supporting and saying the things that our students need to hear. That's a whole different conversation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all of the social pressure from their peers. Mm-hmm. But one of the difficulties here is that you're working with a 15, 16-year-old that still lives with their parents. The main problem are the parents. So whereas with an adult, you can say, okay, you're not a kid anymore, you don't need to behave like that. It's like, you're still in the eye of the storm. You still depend on those people for your survival because you still live in their house, you eat their food, you're clothed by them.
Yep, yep.
So it's helping them manage themselves while they're still in the eye of that storm and still dependent on those people that are causing, you know, that
Well, you know, what a great way to put, I had never considered it like that before, where, you know, and if you think about that tornado around them, you know, here you've got that massive wind tunnel. They're in the very center of it. They can only see the sky up. Everything else around them is this freaking blur. And then you've got people throwing fucking chunks of furniture in there at them. I had never thought about that. What a, you know, isn't it? I love these kind of eye-opening moments when I have them, right?
Yes.
I had never considered that. And that does how things like that help me change my perspective.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
because it's silly as that. Thank you, Nicole. Thank you.
No, you're, you know, and it's like, it's not like you can say to them, oh, you can just get up and leave because they can't.
Yeah, you can't.
they can't. So for me, this is very much about helping them find their center and find their gravity, right? Find their grounding point, which is hard when you're a teenager, because like I say, there's so many factors, you know, and you're going through this growth and
hormonal change. Analogy about life wouldn't work with, now that I think about it, doesn't work with the teenagers, because I'm always telling people, you know, think of yourself as a surfer on a surfboard. Life is the water. We don't control the water. A surfer doesn't try to control the water. All the surfer does is rebalance himself, right? Yeah. That's what our job is. It's surrendering to it. But the difference with a teenager is someone else has the ability to come in and yank the fucking surfboard out from underneath of them without them even being prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. But isn't that is life, right? There's always going to be someone that's ready to yank your surfboard out from under you. You know, you need that lesson again. Here, let me tug it out from under you.
Oh, you're doing well. Bam.
Yeah. And your immediate family are going to be your starting point, right? Your initial learning, your biggest lesson in that. Oh, always. I can't remember which spiritual teacher it is that says, if you think you're enlightened, go home and spend a week with your parents.
Yeah. Oh, who is it that said that? That's funny.
Was it Ram Dass or something? I can't remember who it was exactly.
Yeah. That's funny though, because, when you say that and I apply it to my parents and whatnot, like every week I go and spend at least a week with my dad and stepmom every year. Mm-hmm. Have a blast. It's never a problem. I'm going to spend a week with my mom in the UK and mm-hmm. it's not going to be a problem, but it's certainly a much different experience than hanging mm-hmm. out with my laid back dad, who's like super chill and, hey, let's just have a good time. And, da, da, da. And the opposite end of that is my mom, who's just wound tight, tight, tight and, mm-hmm. and nervous and anxious. And it's like, mom, we don't need to do anything.
Mm.
And I think about that now. Think about how that would be on a teenager growing up around that.
Yeah. Right?
Around those two dueling sort of energies into that storm, right?
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
I'm
going
to have all sorts of fun with that analogy. Thanks. I'm going to be able to do all sorts
And you know, I noticed that as I'm working with these kids, right? I see it. I'm like, and I really had to take a step back at one point and I was like, shit, you know, they're in this right now. There is no, you can just step away from it.
It's walk away, take a break.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, no, we're going to have to work really hard here to help you really, you know, really plant your roots in a solid way. And the most beautiful thing is, okay, there's a number of things here. So many teenagers, all they really need to hear from somebody that they know, like, and trust, that's not their parents, yeah? All they really need to hear from some sort of, and I'm going to say authoritative figure, because at the end of the day, it's somebody they look up to,
right? Yeah,
is, I believe in you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see something in you that maybe you don't see yet. And maybe your parents aren't able to see in you yet because they're comparing you to your siblings. Right. And you've got this fabulous sibling that, you know, gets straight A's and, you know, does this, that, and the other. And as far as they're concerned, you're the fuck up. And they keep telling you. Yeah. But I believe in you and I see something in you that they don't. And that is the most powerful thing. When they feel that is coming from a place of truth, from genuine truth, that I think for those young people is really the moment where they're like, oh, really? Maybe there's something in that. And then it's
so amazing to think about the fact that kids don't just naturally get that. Right. Because I think that was one of the things that even unknowingly, I don't know how it was done. My dad is a freaking amazing dude and was an amazing parent, because that was one of the things that we always knew that we could do anything we wanted. Mm. You know what I mean? And that we're always okay. That whole thing that your kids are missing out on is one thing that the ability that my dad instilled in all of us.
Mm. That's a rare thing.
How we did it.
Yeah. It's because a rare thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's really rare. It's really rare. And it doesn't matter what social class you come from.
Right.
You know what I mean? It really doesn't matter. You could come from any social class, any background, and you might have a parent that's telling you every day, I believe in you, you've got this, and you can move forward. Or you might, you know, come from an extremely wealthy family with everything you could ever need, and somebody's telling you, you're useless. You know, why aren't you as good as your brother? Why aren't you as good as your sister? You're constantly fucking up.
But, you know, yeah, and I think that that's where that thought had come into my mind is that I'm not going to say that that never happened, being a middle child, right? And the parents do that, but it never affected me. And that's why sometimes why I want to work specifically with, there is, in Seattle here, there is a organization for gay youth that are homeless. Living on the street sort of thing. And that's, I have thought a lot of times about going there and wanting to offer services. The challenge is because, you know, the industry that we work in, we don't hold, you know, national certifications for things. And so they're a little bit less apt to say, yes, come on in and work with these kids. But yeah, it's interesting. Now you've got me pumped up and interested in that again as something to do with some of my time.
Yeah, look, it's for me, teens, young people have always been my passion. I really struggled a lot when I was a teenager for a number of reasons, and I had a really shit time. And I remember, I think at one point when I was probably about 15 or 16, thinking, I want to help people like me when I grow up. I want to be able to help people like me because, you know, at one point I was seeing psychologists and I remember going into see these people and never lasted more than one session because at that time they just sit there and say nothing, stare at you and wait for you to say something. And I was like, really? I was like, I'm 15, 16. I'm angry. I'm annoyed. I'm upset. I'm depressed. And you're expecting me to start a conversation with you? Piss off.
Yeah. See, I never had any of that. Didn't get exposed to that until my 20s.
Yeah. And it was a really strange model. Even then I was like, this is just weird. You know, why would anybody think this is okay? Why would anybody think that this is effective? It's not, it's rubbish, you know? And it wasn't until kind of I came across more complementary and alternative therapies that I started to find people that I could actually connect with. And connection is about give and take, right? It's about somebody opening themselves up to you so you feel comfortable opening yourself up to them. It's not about I'm going to stay completely guarded and not give anything of myself over to you, but I'm going to expect you to, you know, pour your life out to me.
To me, right. As if I've got all the answers.
Right. Yeah. And for me, that there was a big problem, that lack of connection. And it wasn't until I started finding people that I could have that connection with. I was like, oh, I trust this person. You know, this person has trusted me with something. I feel like I can trust them with something.
Yep.
I was doing a training on suicide prevention and suicide awareness. No, sorry, self-harm. It was a self-harm training. And they'd interviewed a load of young people that were self-harmers or had previously been self-harmers. And they were saying, you know, part of the, you know, the marks on their arms, the scars on their arms, it's like if they go to somebody and somebody reacts in a way, like a way of repulsion or something to the marks on their arms, how can I trust them with what the marks inside of me?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember you saying that at one point.
Yeah. And I thought that made a lot of sense. It's like, okay, here are my scars, my physical scars. If you can handle that, then maybe I can show you the pain that I'm carrying around inside of me. But if you can't handle that, the superficial, you certainly aren't going to be able to handle the more profound.
Well, you know, isn't that the same thing with even adults though? I mean, look at people with birthmarks, with disabilities, with bad skin, you know, acne, terrible scarring, all that kind of stuff. And there's, you know, I think that when people pull back from that and they act kind of shielded, I think that that's the reason that a lot of those folks are a little bit more shielded, like you said, is because they know that there's other people uncomfortable about their situation.
Yeah.
And I'm not good with that myself.
Yeah. Yeah. But it made complete sense when I was going through that training. It's like,
it does make sense. I mean, that's why I say, if you think about an overweight person or anything else, if you're not comfortable with where they are, then how can they feel comfortable with opening up to you?
Yeah. Part of the problem with the parental relationship there, and I completely understand the parent point of view, they're terrified, right? My child's cutting themselves or harming themselves in some way, and they're terrified. You know, for them, that's probably one of the worst things you could ever discover about your child, that they're self-harming, mm-hmm. that they're deliberately or intentionally scarring their body or making themselves bleed. And I get that. I understand. And when we're scared, when we're terrified, how do we respond? We respond from a place of fear, which can manifest in anger and threats and, you know, we don't know what to do with this and all of those different stages of, you know, denial and okay, let's sit down and talk about this. Or maybe they never even get to the let's sit down and talk about it.
Right.
But one of the main things that I've been, you know, really sort of trained in terms of suicide awareness and self-harm awareness, don't ever be afraid to open up the conversation about it. They know what's going on. Yeah.
They're not stupid.
Yeah, of course. You know, and the first step is to say, you know, what's going on? Tell me about this. I want to understand. You know, why are you doing this? What are you getting out of it? I want to understand.
I mean, I think that's where learning and being able to teach people how to utilize, even on a basic level, nonviolent communication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being able to express to somebody, listen, this is the actions that you took. This is what it created within me.
Mm.
I need to help to understand this. Can you help me understand this? This is what my need or want is around this. And then are you able to provide me with that need or want? You know, and by doing so, it takes all of the blame out of everything. And it puts the responsibility of just, it depersonalizes it to a sense. It doesn't say that these are the actions that you took, not you are this, but these particular actions created this sort of a response within me,
mm-hmm.
right? And I need help in understanding why this happened, and I need you to respond differently. Is that something, you know, you can kind of do?
Yeah.
So just being able to teach them that basic thing.
Yeah.
You know, because it does. It helps people, I think, to just be able to take that moment, that step back.
Mm, yeah. And it's entering into those uncomfortable conversations, entering into those uncomfortable spaces that people don't want to go. Yeah. It's those taboo subjects. Thing, you know, it's oh no, I don't want to touch that because I don't know about it and I don't know what to do with it and I don't know how to talk about it. But really, open conversation is the best way you can go around it, because it's the only way that you're going to overcome a fear around it. I think a lot of people associate self-harm with severe mental health issues or psychiatric problems, where really for a lot of people, it's a way of expressing an inner pain that they're going through. It's a way of releasing.
Understand that this is where I'm at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think sometimes it's a way for them to kinesthetically create or express what they are feeling emotionally.
Yeah.
You know, I can't feel it, but if I do this now, I can feel this.
Mm.
This gives me something. This is a reason that I can feel this way.
Yeah,
right? And understanding.
It's that release of adrenaline, isn't it? It's a story comes to mind of a very good friend who's also a hypnotist, and I'm sure they won't mind me sharing the story completely anonymously. A teenager came to see them. A teenage boy came to see him, about 14 years old. The mother brought him in, said, you know, he's self-harming. We're really concerned, this, that, and the other. And so working with this guy, I think the first session, walks in, friend turns around and says, so, you know, your mum tells me you're self-harming. What's that about? And he goes, oh, you know, it's a release. Guy turns around and says, you're a 14-year-old boy. That's what wanking's for.
Yeah.
And the kid's face completely just, you know, just like, what? You know, who are you? Yeah. Where am I? What is this conversation?
Truth, though, I mean.
But, you know, just to kind of inject that kind of that wittiness and that truth bomb, really,
yeah,
completely changed his state, and where he was very unwilling to engage, probably to start off with. And there was this real kind of front and you're not coming through here. Suddenly it was like, oh, all right, you're not like anyone else I've spoken to, are you?
Right.
And ended up doing great work with this kid, like great work. And
because that's being real.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm pretending to be something I'm not. And that's,
who that is.
And that's what I love about this school that I'm at the moment. All of the staff dress how they want to dress. There's no uniform. There's no dress code. You wear what you would wear normally. And so the vice principal is sitting in a hoodie. And I, you know, like it's, and that helps with the relationship building with the kids, because they can be who they want to be. They don't have a uniform. And so because they can see that the staff, and it's all on first name basis with the staff, because they can see that we are not pretending to be anything other than who we are, it creates trust. It's yeah, not, you know, I go I to school.
I think that goes almost too far to a degree, because it also doesn't teach them how to differentiate between levels of respect that you owe people. And I'm going to tell you why. When I was teaching, particularly when I was working with teenagers with horseback stuff and riding and stuff like that, I didn't require any of them to call me anything. I was living back east, and so most of them called me Mr. Anthony, you know, and that was fine for me. But there, it shows that you are just being respectful, I believe.
You'd be surprised. If you set this up in the right way, it's very much about the setting, how you go about creating the setting, because there are boundaries.
Yes, yes, okay.
There absolutely are boundaries. And even though it seems like maybe there's not, just because everybody dresses how they want. I mean, nobody's walking around in, like, you know, lingerie and things like that. Do you know what I mean?
No, but, you know, everybody's, I mean, there's almost a sense of, you know, and I can appreciate that. I mean, I remember where I went when I went to high school. I don't remember any of our teachers ever dressing up. They wore jeans and a shirt. The females sometimes wear jeans and a shirt too, or a dress, or there was never any kind of uniforms in any of the stuff that I went to at all. Maybe the principal wore a suit and tie or a jacket and a tie, but that was it.
Yeah. So it's not about kind of creating, it's creating individuality and saying it's okay to be who you are. And because they see who we are, and we can see who they really are, because we're not trying to create this uniformity amongst them. Mm-hmm. It already establishes a level of trust and a level of openness, and like, oh, maybe I can actually sit down and have a conversation with this person about how I'm feeling today.
Right.
Because I see them, right? I see that they're not pretending to be something else while they're at school. And then they go home and they're like, you know, a TikTok sensation. Do you know what I mean? Like, they are who they say they are. Do you know? They are who they are in school. They are who they say they are across the board. And that generates a different level of relationship.
Well, isn't that the truth though, with even the people that we work with as adults?
Yeah. But I think that's
why they come to us.
Yeah, of course. But I think with teenagers, it's a trick that's massively missed in most schools.
Because I'm not exposed to it that much, I'm thinking to myself, why would it have to be a trick? But I treat everybody the same, and that's not something that most people do.
No.
Every single person that I come across, I don't give a shit if you are the CEO of a company. Mm. You don't get any more respect from me than the person who is the customer service rep who just opened up the door and checked me in. I'm going to treat people are people. I think the Depeche Mode song, People Are People, really stuck in my head from the first time I heard that in like seventh, eighth grade. Or maybe I was older than that. Anyway, doesn't matter. But that idea that it's just like no one deserves any greater. I've never been starstruck, and I've met a lot of movie stars when I worked, you know, in the airline industry. So yeah, people are people. And the more that we can teach kids that, you're right.
Yeah. Teenagers get a bad rap. They get a bad rap. Oh, you're just being a moody teenager. Oh, you know, hormonal changes and stuff like that. The problem is people don't have patience and aren't willing to meet them where they're at. It's like, grow up already. No, why should they? They're going through the appropriate stage of development. You need to meet them where they're at. Don't expect them to be a 40-year-old when they're only 15.
But they're already talking like 30-year-olds, right? How much more growing up do they need to do so quickly?
Yeah, exactly.
They're already where you are almost conversationally dumbass. So why don't you let him give him a bit of a pill and why don't you take a pill and chill for a while?
Yeah, that really irritates me, that grow up. No. We don't need to tell them to grow up because they're exactly where they need to be at their stage of development. You're the one that needs to step down.
You're the one who needs to grow up and understand that they just need to be where they are.
Yeah, exactly.
And where they are. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Exactly.
Today has brought in a lot of new ideas for me and some things for me to remember and to take into consideration when I am even around some teenagers. Because, you know, at 53, I don't, like you said, I am completely disconnected from that generation. I don't know. And they have been exposed to so much more at such an earlier age than I ever was. You know, it's amazing to me.
And a lot of it, a lot of it can be quite traumatic. The level of information they're being exposed to at such young ages, you know, they're being exposed to, you know, porn quite young now, and that their minds aren't ready for it.
No. Yeah, I agree 100%.
And that massively distorts their perception of what relationships and sex is and you know, their minds
their
just
bodies.
Exactly. Yeah. So that they're being exposed to all sorts of stuff that really emotionally they're not ready for yet, but they're still having to process it.
I remember the porn that we were exposed to when I was a kid was the Playboy magazine that was occasionally found in a fort, you know, somewhere or in someone's shop or something, or someone one of our friends had, you know.
Yeah.
And that was just naked people.
Right. But now in a movie, you can find what 20 years ago would have been considered like hard porn.
Right. And you wouldn't have been able to find it unless you went into a specialized place to find that. Exactly. And then you had to be in a certain age to get in there anyway. So I wasn't exposed to any of that kind of stuff. And now, I'm so glad I grew up when I grew up. Oh, thank you.
It's a complex time, you know, it's complex. And look, every generation has its difficulties and its challenges and its complexities. It's about trying to understand and you know, the addiction, the technological addiction that's going on now, that's having all sorts of impact. The pandemic as adults, it's had its own effect. Teenagers, it's had a different effect, right? Essentially, they lost 2 years of school, 2 years of their social life, which at that age is much more impactful than at our age.
Right. And, you know, now I saw on one of the morning news shows, there's this thing that shows that babies that were born just before the pandemic and during the pandemic, at the start of it, they are going to be behind. There's going to be the whole generation behind in education and social interaction stuff because they don't understand facial recognition. And, you know, to me, this is mind-boggling. And I guess it was at first until I started thinking about it. If you're not going over, you're not being able to see your cousins, your aunts, your uncles, your grandmothers, all that kind of stuff, and you're only exposed to your parents, and every other person that you see is this, there would be, because I used to think to myself, come the fuck on, come on. You know, I mean, you don't take your mask off at home and smile at your kid. But if the kid isn't exposed to that with everybody else, you know, and there's some of this stuff that as being a non-parent that I don't always, I'm not always able to pull into my perspective until someone points it out. And it's like, wow, I hadn't thought about, because what's that going to do to those kids?
Yeah. Also being born right in the epicenter of a worldwide state of fear.
Yeah. Yeah. What's that going to do energetically?
Coming into the world where everybody's going, oh, fuck.
Yeah, no shit.
It's a lot to come into. But
and think about how even adults were impacted by that. And I look at a lot of adults and people, and I'm, because it didn't, what I can consider other than financially with my business, I can't think of any way I was really affected by it. Right? It messed with my business plans, right? But it did that to everybody. But I guess because I'm not an ultra social person, you know, I was like, so I don't get to go have cocktails with people I don't get to go have cocktails with anyway. Okay.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. I was like, gosh, I don't have to fly anywhere. I don't
know. I know. Dad was the same way. And we were all kind of like, a lot of people in my family were like, oh, right on.
Yeah.
It was harder on my sister and her husband because they're social, but my brother and I and my dad were like, yeah, this is the way. Anyway, time to say goodbye. I'll saying good night.
I hope this has been a useful conversation. This, as you can probably hear, is my absolute passion, working with young people. I love them. I'm so humbled by them and really love being around our young people and being exposed to them and all of the wonderful things that are going on in their minds and in their lives. And
So there you have it, listeners. If you know somebody who's got a challenging teenager or a teenager who is looking for someone interesting to connect to, Nicole is your gal, because of course she can work via Zoom. People, don't forget, she can work with anybody all over the world. So don't forget that. And you know, I think
nice little plug there.
Well, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
You know, it's what you do. It's what you do well. Why not? There's nothing wrong with that. You know, hey. If you're fabulous, you're fabulous. At any rate, on that note, I think it's time for us to say goodbye. It's been an interesting conversation, not one that we had planned on having. It just kind of happened. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again here soon, sweetheart.
Cool. Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast. Don't forget to leave us a review and follow us on Facebook. You can also join our mailing list at hypnotichealers.com.